that has created bonding indebtedness just as much as all other property will. So it seems more logical to me to distribute the portion that's based on rate based on the total rate within the district and not just on the operating, because the tender is a part of the value of the district and therefore would be subject to the bonded indebtedness just as any other property is. And I guess that's the real key is what we look at is, there is a shift from one to the other, you know, depending on how you do it from the high bond to the low bond districts. It's not a major factor, let me point one other thing, in that only 25% of the money is distributed based on the rate distribution anyway. The other 75% is on timber harvested in the district.
Oh, excuse me. The rate, you distribute 75% of the harvest value, but within the county, then you have to multiply by the rate. So it does show up in both, it doesn't affect the distribution to the county. That is, you first make a distribution to all the counties, and the rates are not taken into account there.
It's the distribution in the county either way.
Yeah, and so it's a distribution within the county, and it does show up in both the land factor and the harvest factor.
Representative Scott?
Well, I guess with regard to schools or maybe even cities, that I guess maybe cities would, do they participate?
Yeah, all the districts that have a harvest history and forest land will get.
Well, anyway, for schools, I guess eventually over a long, long period of time it would even out, because they would all be building new schools at one time or another, or if not, the deteriorating school, there was a district that didn't need to build new facilities, wouldn't be building, and therefore it would help the district that was expanding and needed new facilities. And so I can see that it would be okay to have the bonds in, but the question for George, I guess, what about the potential of other districts, such as a road district like we talked about the other day, or a sewer district, or an irrigation district that would issue a lot of bonds? Now, I guess most of those would be paid back by revenues of some type. Well, on roads they wouldn't. But is there the potential for some district, special district, issuing a lot of bonds and then using timber tax monies to help pay for them to the detriment of everybody else?
Okay.
George?
I suppose there's that potential. The fact is that to issue those bonds, they're going to have voter approval. The property taxes that are going to pay for those bonds would have to be at some point approved by the voters anyway. If the people in the area feel that they want to have this high bonding, all we're saying with the severance is that it would go to help offset that levy just as it would any other, whether they operate on a one-year levy or whether they operate on a long-term bond. It could have some shift.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative McCracken.
What does the consortium want?
The consortium doesn't care, is my understanding. Ron, do you want to come up and tell us that half your members are on one side and half are on the other side, and you'll live with whatever the committee does?
That's a good question to ask.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ron Chastain, representing the consortium. Half the members on one side, and half the members on the other side.
Words in your mouth.
No swimming, people.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Scott.
Currently, I guess the distribution includes bonds, right?
Yes.
So I guess I would ask Ron if there's any great hardship on anybody or any great amount of dissension as a result of including the bonds.
No, I don't think there is. I know Representative Woody looked at it, we talked about it, and again, I think Representative Troop captured the essence of his argument, that he thought it would be fair of just using the operating levy, because of, again, it's all within the county, and he thought someone could come in and start a big building program if they wanted to, and they are going to be taking revenues from the other districts within that county. And so I think it's strictly an equity issue with Representative Woody. The most consortium Again, some are for it and some are against it. And none are too concerned about it. They probably don't understand the impact of it.
Representative McCracken hasn't represented what it is without in some visual display so that people can graphically understand the impact of this.
There are some overhead projections. No, I'm kidding.
I think we all understand the issue. Probably, I don't think it makes a great deal of difference one way or the other. I will still support the bill whether bonds are in or out. And I don't know whether Representative Charman feels the same way. I'm not sure whether that's a linchpin or a minority report issue, but I guess my feeling is I haven't worked any of the committees, and I don't think George or Jim have worked any of the committee. And I guess what I'd like to do is to place a motion and let the eight people on the committee, and if we need a ninth, we'll get the ninth people of the committee, just make the determination how we're going to go in and proceed. Representative
Charman? Mr. Chair, I would move to delete the new language in lines 17, 18, 19, and 20 on page 7 of the -9 amendments to the effect of staying with the rest of the policy of leaving the bond amount in there.
Okay. Representative Trahern moves the deletion of the portions of lines 17, 18, 19, and 20 that would return us essentially to the current practice and leave bonds in. Representative Burroughs?
Just a clarification. He said the new language in line 17. I presume we're leaving average?
Please.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, I will vote no, but would certainly encourage the committee to vote your conscience on this one. Further discussion? Representative Scone?
Well, I raised the issue of special districts being able to do a lot of bonding and then getting the using the interest tax to help pay for it. But at the same time, I think that school districts or any district, as a matter of fact, that does build a facility has a need. And so I guess that but by going with the including the bonds in the rate tends to help the districts that have the greatest need. And so I guess that's where I'll come down.
Further discussion, Representative Clary?
Well, just briefly, I'm going to vote for the motion also for a couple of reasons. One of them, I guess, being that I see in a large school district, and in some ways you could look at the example area that you gave as being a couple of small school districts, which could just as easily be one large school district. Oftentimes, you find that at least in my district, the areas that vote against even operating levies are the same areas that get all the new schools, and so I think that I see equity in terms of kind of that kind of view, and also maybe even better, how do you explain to the taxpayer that you're not going to get quite as much of a participation in these monies because you've been responsible enough to vote for some additional bonds to build some new buildings. So for, I guess, some big reasons along that line, I'll vote for the motion.
Further discussion, Representative Burroughs?
Just regardless how this motion, it's a good bill. And I think that this one amendment should, or this one motion should be the demise or the passage of the bill.
Representative Scone? Well, I guess one of the considerations is that it seems to be working all right now, and I guess any of us could, because I'm leaving out of the issue, and I guess I would just resist a little bit making a change just for the sake of making it, and I could have come down on either side of this one myself, but so I guess I would rather not make the change and stir something up that may not exist right now.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Jim McCracken?
I don't care either.
But it's a good bill.
Well, I think it's a good sign that we're down to one issue that's relatively insignificant. We worked through a major, important bill.
Mr. Chair, before you call the roll, you just mentioned something about it. My lawyer is reporting. The only way I'd want to do that is if you would help explain this one on the floor.
Before we take the vote on what's really the final issue in House Bill 2168, I'd like to welcome the Tigard High School seniors and their leader Cliff Sheldon this morning. We're the House Revenue Committee, and this is the first day of considering steps that the 1985 legislature will have to take to balance a $3.2 billion budget, and we haven't quite gotten there yet. We're finishing up some details that we weren't able to complete yesterday and the day before, but we are the body that's responsible in the legislature for recommending all tax legislation to the floor of the House. And tax legislation will be considered seriously by the committee in the next couple of weeks as we work toward balancing the state's budget. Tell the police call the roll on the motion, which is to delete the new language with the exception of average on line 17, page 7 of the dash 9 amendments, lines 18, 19, and 20 deleted also.
Representatives Corrin?
Aye.
Hanlon?
No.
Hostica?
No.
Hugo? McCracken?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye.
Trahan?
Aye.
Burrows?
Aye.
And Troop?
No. Motion adopted. Jim Burrows? Let's see, first of all, Chair moves the day 7 amendments, which are the administrative amendments, and that would be with the exception of lines 14 and 15 on page 1, and with the exception of lines 25 through 28 also on page 1 of the day 7 amendments. The exception to the printed language in day 7 that's included in the motion would have the effect of deleting the sunset on the fire account. Discussion on the day 7 amendments. Is there objection to the day 7 amendments? So ordered. Chair moves the adoption of the dash 9 amendments as amended by the Representative Trahan motion. Discussion on the dash 9 amendments.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Trahan.
Question. I assume these two amendments do go together and it worked out where they come together and get them both in there.
Right, yeah, they'll be, we'll put them together before we put in the committee report.
Further questions or discussion on the dash 9 amendments? Is there an objection to the dash 9 amendments? Not so ordered. Representative Burrows moves House Bill 2168 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Burrows?
Can you say a word? We have to carry it.
Any further discussion? Tilda, would you please call the roll on the motion to send House Bill 2168 to the floor of the House to do pass recommendation?
Representatives Hostica?
Aye.
Hugo? McCracken?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye.
Trahan?
Aye.
Lori?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Burrows?
Aye.
Troop?
Aye. Motion is adopted. I will carry House Bill 2168 with Representative Witte. I think I'll carry the distribution part and allow him to carry the lowest distribution part. See, before we proceed on with the rest of the agenda, I'd like to get a report on, let's see, House Bill 3001. Representative Schoon, Representative McCracken, Representative Clory, have the three of you had an opportunity to meet yet on that? Okay, Representative Clory.
Mr. Chairman, we actually had a meeting set up yesterday with representatives of the Fire Marshal's Office, the Insurance Commissioner's Office, and representatives of the insurance industry, and our attendance was sparse. I won't name names, but anyway, I think that, and I don't have the bill with me, but basically, and let me just report that those representatives of the various agencies and the industry were in total agreement and reported agreement by other parties also in Bill 3001 as it was. And then subsequently, in talking with other members who weren't in attendance at the time, I think that what we concluded was that the bill, as it is probably number one necessary to continue funding for the Fire Marshal's Office. Number two, to sort out some priorities as to how these payments should be made. And I think that the broader issues about the fund that handles insurance companies that go bankrupt and other larger issues are probably best left for the interim. And so I think it would be our recommendation that that 301, could be referred to Ways and Means, but should not be altered as it is.
Okay, let's see, Jim, refresh my memory, but does 3001 have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means? Okay. Representative McCracken?
I would certainly concur with the remarks of Representative Laurie. I think it's very important to move that bill along to Ways and Means considering the vagueness in the process. In our discussions on House Bill 2255, we indicated very clearly that we would be studying that whole insurance tax system in the interim, and I think that Representative Hostis's concerns are valid and ought to also be considered strongly in the interim.
Is the recommendation out of the informal working group a due pass or without recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, I think I can say that our feeling would be due pass.
Okay, you concur?
Yep.
Chair moves House Bill 3001 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Jim Burrows?
Did we decide if there's any kind of revenue impact?
Is this your bill, Rick?
Yes.
Revenue, is it very much?
Okay, Mike, gain revenue.
What's happening here is that insurance companies are assessed to help pay for the claims against insolvent insurance companies, and they're allowed to offset those assessments against taxes. And there are three taxes they can offset. Two of them are general fund taxes. One's the corporate excise tax for the domestics, and the other is the gross premiums tax. And the only one that isn't a general fund tax is the fire marshal's tax. And what this says is, first you shall offset against the two general fund taxes, and then if you don't have any more to offset there, you can offset against the fire marshal's tax. To the extent that they do offset against the fire marshal's tax, there'll be a transfer out of the general fund to make up the budget for the fire marshal's office. So it does have a general fund impact. In any case, there's going to be a general fund impact from these assessments. What this just says is, to the extent that it's offset against the fire marshal's office, then it comes right out of the general fund. And if all of the domestic companies offset all of their assessment against the fire marshal's office, it would be about $390,000 a year. But they could offset a significant amount of that against the other tax, the profits tax. So there is some general fund impact. It's hard to tell at this point just which taxes they're going to offset against. If they don't have any corporate profits taxes, then there's nothing to offset there, and they'll offset against the fire marshal's tax.
Further questions or discussion? Tilda, please call a roll on the motion.
Representatives Hostica?
Aye.
Hugel?
Aye.
McCracken?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye.
Strahan?
Aye.
Cleary?
Aye.
Hanlon?
No.
Burrows?
Aye.
Tru?
Aye. Motion is adopted. Next, I'd like to ask Representative Hugel to give us a report on the House Bill 2748 Working Group, which was the stumpage value log export bill. Bruce?
Mr. Chairman, your working group, consisting of myself and Representatives Hostica and Trahan, met with the interested parties on two separate occasions. And my personal goal was to try to define a problem that could be dealt with, and we found a problem. We could not find a problem that could be dealt with in the remaining days of the session. So the working group will be recommending formally to the Revenue Interim Committee that we review several options, including looking at other state policies and various methods of stumpage rate determination, both for Class 2 and Class 1 timber. Obviously, this is a problem that has been with us for quite a while. I think there are some solutions available, but we simply don't have the information. Perhaps in the interim we can develop that information for the 87 session to deal with.
So the recommendation by the informal working group that's been working on the measure is that we make this one of the high priority interim topics, and presumably there was a recommendation that the joint interim committee wants to recommend to the 87 session. It can do that, put the work in during the interim.
That's correct.
Okay. Any objection to that, Representative Trahan, discussion?
Just to add, certainly no objection. the determination of service values on timber, and the numbers of different areas, the types and classes of timber, and the age groups, which vary across Western Oregon as well, is a very, very complex issue. And to attempt at this point to do anything with those and without complete information is, I think, would be foolish. I would like to ask that we do that in the study, but we really allow some time to do it, because I think it's going to take a lot of getting involved in it to really understand the issue for all of us.
I don't know. Okay, we'll definitely do that. We'll put it high on the priority list and dedicate the time. Oh, I think we'll just let it go.
Let it go.
What do you think?
I'll move the table.
Okay. Just let it go. Representative Hostick has been chairing the informal working group on the hobby farm homesite bill. Though closure hasn't been reached, could you give us just a couple of sentence, brief, maybe announcement when the next meeting is?
Well, the group will meet meeting tomorrow, Friday at, I believe it's 2:00. And my impression is that many of the parties that are interested in that issue are still trying to come up with a solution which will be somewhere between what the subcommittee recommended and what the original bill was. And it's a tough one. As you know, Mr. Chairman, we've been working on this issue for about 6 years, and we're trying to get closer to a solution to it. And I think what we have is a number of solutions, and the question is how many votes can we get to settle on one of the solutions, so we'll keep after.
Okay, no time pressure on the informal working group. I want you to have the freedom to try to pull that together, and I guess my feeling is if you can pull it together, we can get out of this committee, and by the floor, we can probably get expedited action on the other side, so take the time that you need. Let's see, I think that's all the updates that we need at this point. We still have a few House bills that we haven't completed action on, and we'll try to get that accomplished within the next week, and I'll keep you posted there. I'll try to get the list. If any of you are getting pressure from any of the members on particular bills that need to be heard, be certain to let me know. We have put off all of the bills that somehow impact the tax code. We put those bills off and have indicated to folks that those bills will be heard on the 20th through the 24th, which is when we're hearing budget balance. And though I haven't made a final decision, I think what probably we'll end up doing is taking all of those bills that we have that will have some impact on the tax code that members or others have expressed an interest in, and just list those for public hearing in a couple of days and take all comers. But certainly recognizing that probably the vast majority, frankly, if not all of those tax code reduction bills probably won't go anywhere unless there's a concerted effort to budget those revenue reductions within the larger scheme of things.
Mr.
Hostica?
As the chair and only member of the informal working group on 2692, I met with myself yesterday and staff, and we do have some recommendations we'll bring to the committee. So I hope that we'll be able to schedule that.
How about first thing tomorrow morning?
Fine.
Okay.
It was that Clackamas.
That's the bill that deals with the Clackamas County Center special problem up there. Okay, anything further before we move to the reconnect? Let's see. The first witness that we have this morning is House Bill 2011, which is the reconnect bill. In fact, I don't want to take any witnesses yet. Steve and Mary Burroughs. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative Burroughs for the tremendous effort that the Income Tax Subcommittee put in preparing this reconnect bill for the committee. I'm sure the entire committee appreciates the fact that they've been meeting regularly for months, and it's been quite a body of work, and they've done an extremely good job. And I'd like to ask Mary, in tandem with Steve, to give us the overview that we need to begin. Representative Burroughs? Go ahead and just direct it if you want to.
Okay, well, I just want to thank, tell the committee that numerous workers, Jim Gaffney, how many, but several CPA firms in Portland divided the federal tax code and how it related to Oregon statutes and where we were out of sync, and I think they found 192 issues. Then we divided them up A through M. A's, we just automatically connected. They weren't policy decisions. M were the most dramatic in terms of policy decisions, and everything in between was sort of a state of flux. And the Department of Revenue worked very hard with us. The CPAs were with us, and we just took point by point, and it's long exercise, but very fruitful. And I appreciate the CPAs and the Department of Revenue for helping us so much.
Thank you. Again, Representative Burrows. Steve, first of all, would you walk the committee through all the materials that we have available to us on the reconnect so we know precisely what materials are available to us at this time?
Okay, in the bill, you should have a book and a set of amendments. That's
how about in the book, we should have a book.
Picky. So, okay, a substantial set of amendments, 23 pages. It should be House Bill 2011-24.
In fact, let's give some indication of how much work the subcommittee's done. This is dash 24 amendments.
Is that a record, Mr. Chairman?
That must be.
Part of the reason for that is that they looked at each set of amendments was drawn up separately on each of the issues that was considered and then consolidated into the one package that you had before you. I can hand out a kind of a brief summary that tries to highlight the items in the bill, and then we can go through some of those if you like.
Please do that.
Of course, the basic issue in the bill was to update.
Okay, first of all, tell us what you have here with a summary.
Okay, it's titled Income Reconnect House Bill 2011. And it just tries to group various issues in the bill that were decided on both the bill and the amendments and give you briefly in sentence form the contents of the bill and as amended. The basic issue, of course, was the reconnect date to move it up to December 31, 1984. And that is due then to the 1984 Tax Reform Act provisions being adopted into our code. The committee decided to make those effective dates go back to 1984 whenever the effective date or operative date was, which corresponds to various transaction dates in 1984. Excuse me. And then also to adopt prospectively any technical corrections acts that Congress would pass. And there is a set of those being prepared, which would make various changes. And then also to use any treasury rules and regulations that would be updated that would be relevant to taxable income. Also, there's a proposal in Congress that looks like it's going to pass for sure dealing with when business property can be used for ACRS appreciation and what kind of records have to be kept to make sure that it is used at least 50% for business use.
Thank you for coming. Enjoy your day in the Capitol.
Why don't you let them leave?
Good luck with graduation, Chair.
Job hunting.
No, you're wrong. You're not recruiting.
Go ahead, Steve.
So if Congress makes those changes, which would basically reduce the record keeping required and allow a little bit more depreciation on luxury cars. If Congress adopts those, then that would also become part of our law, respectively. And then a lot of the other changes is to try to take those basic decisions and changes and make them fit Oregon law, right? A reconnect doesn't always give you a glove on the hand treatment right away, so that's what a lot of the other provisions try to do. We had a innocent spouse rule that would be liberalized as the feds did. The feds made some provisions in how bonds would be taxed, but those would not apply to bonds that the feds do not tax, some of the exempt bonds, but those bonds and interest from those bonds would be passed by Oregon, so that they wanted to make sure that there was the same treatment. There was a provision to adopt a payment in kind tax treatment for farmers, which was not part of the 84 Tax Reform Act, and the code provisions, so that those would be used for farmers and in determining when PIP income would actually be reported.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Trahan.
Is that different than the Fed? Is this not a reconnect issue? Did I understand you correctly? The payment kind.
It is a reconnect issue in terms of the farmer recording his income for state purposes the same as federal. Right? Although it was not part of the Tax Reform Act, it was a separate provision.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Clark.